Today's episode of the Accidental Creative Podcast is brought to you by Skillshare. Get 2 months of Skillshare for just 99 cents at skillshare.com/creative. Hey everyone, welcome to the Accidental Creative Podcast. My name is Todd Henry. I'm the founder of Accidental Creative and the author of several books, including The Accidental Creative and the new book, Herding Tigers, Be the Leader That Creative People Need. One of the things that we talk about on the show is your career, and we talk about how you progress through various phases of your career. And I know that we exist in a culture that often worships youth and young ideas and young energy. And I think that's fantastic and it's necessary. And at the same time, we can often neglect some of the benefits that come with experience and age and the ability to recognize patterns. On today's show, we have Chip Conley. Chip is a senior advisor at Airbnb and a very experienced executive, but he's just written a new book called Wisdom at Work, The Making of a Modern Elder. And on today's show, we're going to talk about some of those career phases that we go through and how we need to begin to think, especially as we move into the middle and later part of our career, how we need to think about the role that we're playing in the marketplace and in our organizations and how we can transfer to becoming someone who helps others see patterns they may not otherwise see and begin to synthesize things that they may not have the experience to be able to synthesize, but we do because of our experiences. So we're going to talk with Chip here in just a minute. Before we dive in, I want to let you know today's episode is brought to you by Skillshare. So what are you doing on a consistent basis to invest in yourself, to invest in your skill set, to develop yourself, to be able to bring more value to your organization, but more importantly, to increase your life satisfaction because you're learning new skills, you're developing yourself. Skillshare is the tool that you can use to make that happen. Skillshare is an online learning platform with over 20,000 classes in business, marketing, technology, design, and more. You can take classes in social media marketing, data science, web development, you name it, and you can find it on Skillshare. So whether you're trying to deepen your professional skill set, you want to start a side hustle, or maybe you just want to explore a new passion, Skillshare is there to keep you learning and thriving. One of the things I love about Skillshare is the diversity of classes that you're going to find there. I'm a Skillshare subscriber, and for Father's Day this year, I got a mandolin, which I was very excited about. I've been eyeing a mandolin for a long time. My family finally bought me one, but I had to learn how to play. There's a course I found on Skillshare about how to tune my mandolin into different alternative open tunings so I could play it differently. So you have something on that end of the spectrum, as well as, you know, I'm obviously, as somebody who works with organizations, fascinated by, you know, corporate culture and leadership and management strategy. You can find courses like Strategy, Essentials for Management Consulting and Startup Success, What Great Managers Do Differently, Crucial Conversations, Tools for Talking When the Stakes are High. Each of these courses have thousands of students. It's a great experience. You're going to learn things you can't learn elsewhere, and you're going to learn it straight from the pros. So join the millions of students already learning on Skillshare today with a special offer just for listeners of the Accidental Creative Podcast. Get 2 months of Skillshare for just 99 cents. That's 2 months of access to over 20,000 classes for just 99 cents. It's an unbelievable bargain. To sign up, just go to skillshare.com/creative. Again, go to skillshare.com/creative to start your 2 months now. We thank Skillshare for sponsoring this episode of the Accidental Creative Podcast. Well, it's great to have on the show today, Chip Conley. Chip is, among many other things, he's the author of a brand new book called Wisdom at Work, The Making of a Modern Elder. Chip, welcome to the Accidental Creative Podcast.
Great to be with you, Todd. Thank you.
So I would love to start with a few definitions. It's very rare that we hear this word wisdom tossed around in the business context, and I wish we heard it more. I think it's an incredibly important word, especially the way that you refer to wisdom in the book. But I would love to hear your take on why you chose this word wisdom for the title of your book, Wisdom at Work. What does that mean to you?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I'm in Silicon Valley. I'm at Airbnb, where I've been for 5.5 years.
Yeah.
And brilliance is clearly something that you hear a lot about in Silicon Valley, the idea of genius, and especially young genius. And yet wisdom is a word that is, I think, a really good bookend to genius, in the sense that there are a lot of young, technologically genius people here. And there are also a handful of wise, experienced people as well. And let me just say, a person can be a genius and older and wise and younger too. So it's I don't want to be demographically too stereotypical here. But the reality is, I think wisdom as a definition is the idea of pattern recognition over the course of time in a way that gives you the perfect alchemy of confidence and doubt. So someone who's wise is someone who doesn't think they know it all. Someone who's wise is empathetic toward other people and has lived enough of their life and had some challenges along the way that allowed them to create some wisdom from those, you know, skinning of the knee or, you know, breaking of the leg. And so those kind of experiences, I think, actually help a person become better in terms of their perspective and judgment.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think we celebrate youth so much. We hear this all the time, but it is true, right? We celebrate youth, and it's almost like, especially in some industries like technology, for example, we assume that once people get to a certain age that they don't get it, that they're not able to somehow capture the essence of what's going on in the same way. But you know, I think that to your point, I think that we need people who can recognize the patterns and who can say, wait a minute, we've been here before. I've seen this a couple of times. I think I know what's coming around the next curve. And often we dismiss those viewpoints simply because we don't want to embrace the wisdom of, as you call them, elders.
You know, I think the thing that's interesting, Todd, is that there's fact knowledge and there's process knowledge. Fact knowledge, there's some facts, like, you know, Abraham Lincoln was the 16th president. That isn't going to change. Right. But facts in certain industries, especially industries that are changing quickly, the facts are often changing. Like, you know, how an iPod worked doesn't matter much to me anymore because I actually don't use an iPod because all of the technology in iPod that I needed moved into the iPhone. Yes. So long story short is the facts around iPod is sort of irrelevant now. And I think that when we think of technology, we often think of knowledge as being factual, or the factual knowledge that, frankly, I don't need to have a lot of knowledge. I just need to know how to navigate Google, because Google has all the knowledge. The knowledge is in my damn laptop, and I can just find it there. But there's a different thing called process knowledge. And process knowledge, which I believe is actually under the umbrella of wisdom, is knowing how to get things done and what's the most efficient and effective process, often in the context of an organization. And organizations are full of people. And you know, the most neglected fact in Silicon Valley is that, you know, most organizations are full of people still. Not yet robots, but people. And the process knowledge of understanding how to get things done, having the emotional intelligence of understanding underlying motivations of those that you work with, and then using that as well as your organizational savvy to be able to effectively get things done more efficiently and productively is, I think, a form of wisdom. And that's when I joined Airbnb 5.5 years ago. I was a longtime boutique hotelier who had no knowledge of technology at all. I was 52 when I joined the company. I'd never worked in a tech company. And I didn't have much experience or knowledge of Airbnb, but I was brought here for my fact knowledge around hospitality. What I found is a lot of my fact knowledge in the home sharing world wasn't very relevant. It doesn't matter how many rooms a maid can clean in 8 hours if you're, you know, an Airbnb host who has a cottage in the backyard and you clean the place yourself. So my process knowledge and I think my emotional intelligence what is ultimately became most valuable as I became the mentor to Brian, the CEO, and a senior leader in the company.
So what was that transition like for you? You know, moving from, because, you know, obviously you had run a very successful company for a long time, and now you find yourself in a very different role. And I have to imagine that there was at least some transition period where you had to sort of internalize and adopt a new way of thinking about kind of who you are and your position, your role, your identity in the midst of all of this. What was that transition like for you?
You know, it was interesting, and I write about it in the book in Wisdom at Work. It required me to evolve and almost edit my historical identity and some of my knowledge in such a way that, you know, this guy, me, who had been CEO of my own company, grew it to 3,500 employees, and then sold it, and then was not sure what was next. And I was asked by the Airbnb founders to join them. I was not going to be the CEO of Airbnb. I didn't want to be. And the CEO was Brian, and I was going to be his mentor. But the first week I was there, I was like, I don't know anything that they're talking about. I don't understand what is product. I didn't understand in the technology lingo. I didn't understand the product. I thought product was the homes and the apartments. No, the product is the website. It's the software application that we offer the world. And, you know, I had to learn a lot of lingo and ways of thinking in the tech world that forced me to actually say, I'm evolving my identity and my knowledge in such a way that I was became a beginner's mind with respect to, I became an intern publicly and a mentor privately. And what that really means is that I was willing to ask a lot of maybe naive questions in meetings that sometimes on occasion actually opened up people's eyes to a blind spot. And sometimes they just sounded like stupid, naive questions. But that I did publicly, whereas the mentoring to Brian, but also over the course of 5.5 years, over 100 employees, I did that privately. And that was when people would just come up and say, you know what, I'm having a really hard time like stepping into running meetings. I've never run meetings before, or I now have six people reporting to me. I'm 27 years old, and I have six people who are all younger than me reporting to me, and I've never had any leadership training. How do I become a great mentor and leader? So those are the kinds of things ultimately I was involved in, even though that was not part of my job, the scope of my job.
So let me ask you this then. You know, some people listening right now are thinking, okay, wait a minute, I'm not, you know, 52 ex CEO of my own company. You know, maybe I'm just somebody who's been around for a while, and I kind of, you know, have some of that, like you said, process knowledge. You know, I've acquired some wisdom, pattern recognition capabilities. At what point should we start thinking about this transition into sort of a modern elder, as you call it?
Yeah. And let me just say, define the modern elder versus the traditional.
Yeah, good call.
And I think the traditional elder was all about reverence. We revered our elders, and there was almost an obligatory element to it. And because change didn't happen all that quickly, elders had a lot of, you know, wisdom that was valuable. And that's still true. But the truth is that in the digital world, that's less true. And so I think the modern elder is less about reverence and more about relevance. And relevance speaks to the idea that I think a modern elder is as much an intern as they are a mentor. So which means that you have to be curious. You have to be willing to learn. And as I did between age 52 and now almost 58, I had to become, you know, a moderate expert in the tech world from scratch, from square one. So I think that, you know, for others beyond me, I mean, I was lucky enough to have the founders of Airbnb tap me on the shoulders. That doesn't happen very often. So how does a person, whether they're 35, because a lot of people start feeling irrelevant at age 35 these days, or 45 or 55, how do you do that? Well, the first step, you know, you can read my book. Great. That's one option.
Which you should, by the way. I just want to let everybody know, you should read the book. Yeah.
Thanks. Wisdom at Work. But I think the better thing to really think about, or the thing to really recognize is – how do you get clear about what you have become a master at over time? A lot of times we think about in our LinkedIn profiles and our resumes, here's the jobs we've had. Here's the identities. Here's the, you know, as you go to a cocktail party and it's a business thing, you have your name and then you have your title and the company potentially. And, you know, the title and the company are of some relevance. What's of most relevance, but we aren't really trained to look at it this way, is what we're a master at. So I had a friend who I went to college with. He was from a very golfing-oriented family. His father was the head of the PGA. And he went to go work for a company called IMG out of college as a sports agent in the golf profession. And he did it for 20 years until he was age 43 when the company actually got sold. And he was one of the older, paid well person in the company, and they basically after 20 years fired him, but they gave him a great severance, and he didn't know what to do next because he basically grew up in a golfing family. He went to college, but then he went to work as a golfing sports agent. He thought his expertise was golf or maybe sports management. So he went to get a master's in his mid-40s for sports management, which was fine, But the thing that he didn't realize about his mastery was his mastery was actually helping people understand in midlife how to remake themselves. Mm-hmm. Because actually, as a sports agent with golfers, that's what he mostly did. His job was to take people like Greg Norman or Nick Faldo or Nancy Lopez, and when they were at sort of in their 40s, late 30s, or at the age when they're starting to think about they're not going to golf anymore, how do you evolve into a new role, whether it's designing golf courses, giving speeches, licensing your name for, you know, for clothes, whatever it is, what's the thing that you're going to do next? That's what he'd become great at. So one, he didn't. It took him years to figure that out. Today, he runs the executive education program at UC Berkeley. Now, because at UC Berkeley, an executive education program is basically people in midlife, often between 30 and 55, who are saying, I'm going to go back to get an executive education because I want to remake myself. So Mike, his name is Mike Riley, Mike thought his mastery was golf. Mike's mastery of what he built over time was being the best career counselor in the world, especially for people in midlife. That example I'm using here, which is in the book, is a great opportunity for all of us to say, what is it that we've gotten really good at over time? Now, I use exercises in the book that help people to mine their mastery, and we've created something called the Modern Elder Academy, which is at modernelderacademy.org, where people can go age. We have a person coming who's 31 years old to it, so it's like just people you would consider elders. And if, by the way, elder and elderly are two different things.
Sure, yes.
We're reclaiming the word elder, which is usually someone who can be just, you know, a generation or two older than the person that they're working with. I mean, I was an elder at age 52 when I joined Airbnb. You could be an elder at 40 if you're surrounded by people who are 25. So long story short is the Modern Elder Academy is a place where people of all ages can come learn how to mine their mastery and repurpose themselves for the next phase of their life.
Mm. Well, I love that. And you know, speaking of phases of life, you talk a little bit early in the book about the traditional three stages of life that we tend to think about when we think about how a life progresses. And you argue that we need to, I think in many ways, redefine how we think about that. Would you mind sharing a little about those stages and kind of how you think we should rethink those stages of life?
Sure. This is a fascinating article in the New York Times this last weekend. If you look at New York Times at FIRE, F-I-R-E, and retirement, you'll see the article. And it spoke to the idea that people are at all ages imagining retiring. But the definition, we almost have to retire the word retirement because they're not actually talking about necessarily retiring, like living on a golf course and, you know, and collecting Social Security. These are people in their 30s who are thinking of this way. And that's what's happening is there's a revolution in thinking about how do we live our lives. Previously, it was the three-stage life. You learn till you're 25 or so. You earn till you're 65. And then you retire till you die. And it was very age-segregated. And today, that three-stage life, especially amongst the millennials, is really being, you know, put to bed or the idea of the three-stage life is being retired. Yes. And that is that people say, you know, I'm going to go work really hard, take a year long, and I'm going to go do this thing remote year where they take me around to, you know, around the world every month for 12 months, 12 different places with a cohort of 75 people. And we learn along the way, but we can even work along the way. And so you could say, I'm going to learn, then I'm going to earn, then I'm going to retire, and then I'm going to go earn again. And then in my 50s, I'm going to go to that Modern Elder Academy that guy Chip Conley started. And I'm going to learn again. And then I'm going to go out and earn again. And the truth is, most people are going to probably work past age 65. Yeah. Some cases, yeah, it's because of necessity. It's about half and half. About half people are going to do it out of necessity. And about half the people are going to do it because if you're going to live till 100, the idea of retiring at 65 and spending 35 years, not with a sense of purpose around your calling about your work, it's perfectly fine to do it, hang out with your kids, your grandkids, get involved in a political activism, you know, help support a foundation or nonprofit that you believe in. But for many people, they still want to earn a living, and even if it's part-time, because it just keeps them engaged.
Yeah, and there's also a sense of, you know, identity and purpose and meaning that we derive from the value that we create, right? And so to be out there creating value, whether that's mentoring someone or actually playing a role in an organization, it plays a huge part in our understanding of who we are and the body of work we're building and the value that we contribute to society.
You know, it's interesting, Todd, and this is why I created the Academy. What's fascinating is historically societies and communities have created rites of passage and celebrations for people when they're going through transitions. If you imagine at puberty, it was, you know, quinceañera, bat mitzvah, bar mitzvah. You know, okay, you're going into your early adult years. When you're going from adolescence to adulthood, it's graduating from something, getting your commencement of high school or college. You decide to get married, you have a wedding. You have baby, you have a baby shower. You die, you have a funeral. But between baby shower and funeral, there's nothing. There's right. nothing. And back when, you know, longevity in 1900 was age 47, midlife was 25 or 24. So you didn't really need anything. But, you know, the longevity in the U.S. moved from 47 to 77 between 1900 and 2000. And the term midlife crisis was coined in 1965 because it was a whole new era of people's lives. But 53 years later, from 1965, we still have not figured out how to help people through all the transitions they go through. And one of the ones that you just mentioned is the transition of a job or a career, mm-hmm. or a marriage, or becoming an empty nester. And there's all these transitions that happen. And people are just silently trying to figure out how to make it through them. And so it's been fascinating to see how resonant people are with the idea of sharing their best practices with each other during a transitional time in midlife.
Yeah. Well, I want to ask one more question because we're nearing the end of our time here. But how can companies or frankly individuals embrace the role of modern elders in organizations?
Yeah, you know, first of all, individuals need to take it on. You know, it's like back in the feminism era of the 1960s, it was like women had to sort of like take ownership of that. Otherwise, it wasn't going to go anywhere. So, you know, we of the midlife generation, which is mostly Gen Xers and boomers, but also the silent generation beyond boomers, need to sort of own the idea that we still have some wisdom to offer the world. Mm-hmm. But secondly, in chapter 9 of the book, I have a whole set of 10 ideas of what organizations can do to actually make themselves, better suited for actually looking for that wisdom. And it's everything from looking at most companies have been told by their employees that they would like to, when they're later in life, move from full-time to part-time to no time over the course of a few years. And yet very few companies do that. So rethinking how you look at that, rethinking how you attract people for age-diverse teams, rethinking the idea of diversity. We tend to think of diversity primarily as gender and race, and sometimes disabled, and sometimes LGBT. But we actually don't think about diversity related to age. And there's all this evidence now, empirical evidence, that shows that age-diverse teams are more effective. So there's a variety of things people can do, and you know, the book certainly can give some direction for people who want to learn about that more.
Yeah. Or people,
I write a lot of columns on LinkedIn. So if you go to the Chip Conley, Conley profile on LinkedIn, you'll see a lot of my articles.
Fantastic. Well, the book is called Wisdom at Work, The Making of a Modern Elder. The author is Chip Conley. Chip, thanks so much for taking time to be with us today.
Todd, thank you. Appreciate it.
And of course, as always, thank you for listening. If you like this episode, make sure you subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts or at accidentalcreative.com/subscribe. Remember, friends, cover bands don't change the world. Don't be a cover band. You need to find your unique voice if you want to thrive. We'll see you next time.